Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. In a rapidly escalating technology-driven world, few innovations are more exciting than the incredible advances that seem daily to be occurring in the fields of medicine, health, and longevity. And few people, in my estimation, are better equipped to keep us up to date on the latest information, reports, and the research from the leading edge of science and new integrated medicine than my former co-host of the Truth in Medicine show, Dr. Denise Warden. If you're new to this show, Dr. Warden is a physician and a global health educator who's renowned for identifying and helping to introduce unique healing modalities and therapies to the USA. She's also an expert diagnostician who lectures worldwide, training physicians and educating the public on a wide variety of medical and health topics. Dr. Denise Warden, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Sandy. Always a pleasure. Love your audience.
It's hard to believe that it's been 8 months since the last Truth in Medicine show.
Doesn't seem that long ago, does it?
No,
it doesn't at all.
And, you know, judging
for an update, right?
Absolutely, it's time for an update. Judging from the chat that you and I had last week, so much has been happening, not just for you personally, but also in terms of emerging research findings and advances that are rapidly changing the way cancer and other major health issues are being thought about and approached. I don't know how you keep up with it all.
You know, I think it's passion and purpose, right? It doesn't feel like work. It doesn't feel like a job. It doesn't feel like an obligation when you're just absorbed and consumed by wanting to learn. You know, I'm just a lifelong learner and educator. I love imparting what I've learned. And I don't know. I mean, you don't need as much sleep whenever you're excited about learning and teaching.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you're passionate about it, and I'm glad that you're the science and research nerd, because that gives us someone to turn to when we need information.
I consider that a compliment, that be calling me a nerd, that very much.
Absolutely. So I know that you've been traveling a lot, attending conferences, whizzing around on fact-finding trips. You were recently in France. Tell us what you were doing there.
Well, Boron, who is the largest homeopathic manufacturer in the world, sponsored a few physicians from around the world, mostly oncologists. So they invited me, and they invited a couple of oncologists here from the States, mostly affiliated with MD Anderson. And in fact, one of them is one that I had introduced the homeopathics to for Banner MD Anderson here in Arizona, and he was excited about it and possibility of using those homeopathic medicines in conjunction with conventional care for oncology. So we all got to go to France, and before we toured the Boron facilities in Lyon, we went to Paris to the first integrative cancer center in France, and it was called the Raphael Institute. Beautiful. They have therapies that are socially paid for by their government and for those that are going through cancer. And what was beautiful is that they went from the leading edge technology, so they had cameras in the rooms where they could look for facial recognition in the patient to see what kind of therapies might help them, whether they were in fear, whether they were angry, whether they were sad. And then they have art therapy and yoga. They had a kitchen there where they have, they're taking fresh garden vegetables and teaching cooking classes and cooking for the patients, and not just for them, but for their family as well. Truly integrative care, from leading technology to the oldest of using homeopathy and using tried and proven older therapies for these cancer patients. So it was a beautiful place to visit. And after that, we went to Lyon and visited the manufacturing facilities in for boron. And I, Sandy, toured a lot of manufacturing facilities in the United States, from pharmaceutical to nutraceuticals. And I tell you what, they very impressive facility.
Wow, you know, it is so interesting to see that finally they're beginning to take the, you know, a truly holistic approach and using the best of everything.
Right. I mean, Europe in many ways is ahead of us. I still think we probably have some of the best emergency care in the world. But when they take a person with a chronic degenerative disease or something like cancer, they're very good at recognizing mind, body, spirit, soul. They actually, the Institute, the Raphael Institute, Raphael is, and they acknowledge that that was a angel of healing. And they're not afraid to introduce into medicine more of the spiritual side of things. So it was a beautiful thing to experience and be, introduced and work with some of their therapists and some of the patients.
You know, Boiron, I mean, I've probably been taking Boiron products for about, I would say, a good 40 years. I've
be
used
careful,
them throughout.
You date yourself.
I know. I was just thinking that before I brought out the word 40. But, it's always my first go-to for anything. I brought my kids up on it. I've used it for their emotional, their psychological, their health issues. I've even used it with my cats and dogs. And I'll tell you a little secret, that when my mother had a stroke and she was very, very depressed, I used to crush up homeopathic remedies, and I'd put it in her sugar so that when she was making her tea, she was getting doses without even knowing about it. And I'm so pleased to see that people are beginning to take homeopathy seriously. I know there's a lot of skeptics. I know there are moves afoot to try and kill off homeopathy, but it really encourages me to hear that now they're looking at homeopathy in cancer treatment. How specifically are they using homeopathy?
Well, for now, because everyone's trying to stay within the framework of we want scientific rationale, it's really not being, no one's saying they're treating cancer with it. They are treating cancer patients that many times have elected to do standard of care. That's chemo, radiation, surgery, and they have many, many side effects from those treatments. So homeopathy is being utilized for those horrible side effects that can happen from the treatment. In fact, Dr. Jean-Lionel Bagot, B-A-G-O-T, has written a book, Cancer and Homeopathy, and that's been translated in many different languages. And it's for oncologists who say, listen, we know that we've got side effects. We know that we're hurting, by trying to help, but hurting some of the patients. And they're utilizing homeopathy because they know it's been shown that it can be safe to use with other medicines, because you can't use nutraceuticals and other things as easily, because it may interfere with their therapies. But homeopathy is seen to be safe, at least for those oncologists that are open to it. And there are more and more, like the ones that I was talking about, even with Banner MD Anderson, that are willing to look at homeopathy for the side effects of cancer.
What kind of side effects?
Well, they can get GI distress, and so they, diarrhea, vomiting, mm-hmm. nausea. The rashes that can come. There's even along the line of hair loss. There's grief. There's anxiety. All the mental, emotional, fear symptoms that come along.
I don't know if we've lost Dr. Warden here, but I can't hear her voice. Are you there, Dr. Warden? Oh. Well, Dr. Warden, are you there? We still have you on the line, but we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
I don't know. Sorry. It's one of those, don't understand technology, right? Where were
I was so engrossed in what you were saying, it completely threw me when you disappeared.
Right. I think I was talking about Dr. Bagos, and you asked the question.
Yeah. I asked the question about specific side effects. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, the major ones where there's, you know, fatigue and hair loss and burns, gingivitis, that's the, you know, the oral sores that can happen. They lose their ability to taste. The nervous disorders, so they can get neuropathy, which is tingling and pain in the toes and the fingers, dizziness. I mean, all of the classic symptoms of going through cancer treatment, and they pretty much have been addressed in the a way that we look at symptoms to be able to say, how can we help these patients with those symptoms before, during, and after surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation. And it's been lined out for those oncologists that are open for to say, listen, homeopathy looks like it's safe to be able to utilize with the medicines where it won't interfere, and why not try it? And I know with my patients that we've helped many symptoms. And, you know, over the years, not just with cancer patients, but, you know, I've done some clinical trial. I was in the sample of case histories to be able to look at injections, homeopathic injections, and how we help patients with many things, Sandy. And, you know, I'm a big proponent. I've taught many physicians in the United States about it. But what we need to do is do more what we call case histories, where we're collecting the data and then we publish. And so that was part of what I was presenting on in France. And I just got back, you know, there were a couple places in France at Boron and also at the Raphael Institute to the physicians around the world saying we have to do better in collecting data so that we can show, even if we don't know the mechanism of action, if we can't show how it's working, we can at least show that it is working. And it's up to us to collect that data so we can get more doctors and patients utilizing it.
Well, it's very encouraging that MD Anderson are getting involved and other reputable, you know, health organizations, because I know that there seems to be a stepping up of the efforts to really discredit and kill off homeopathy. Bit of a polarization going on there. You know, on the one hand, you've got the skeptics and the people who are dead against it, trying to get rid of it. On the other hand, you've got all these incredible people stepping forward and, you know, doing the research that we need to show this is a valid therapy.
Right. That's right. So, you know, sometimes we just don't know the mechanism of action. When people say, well, then that's got to be bunk if you can't show it. Well, we don't know the mechanism of action of many of the pharmaceutical drugs, Tylenol being among them. So should we throw Tylenol out because we don't really understand how it works? So when that is the objection, I just quickly bring up about the mechanism of action of many of the pharmaceuticals that are considered part of our standard of care. But, you know, now it's a matter of, you know, Germany's watching France, Europe, and this. Their national healthcare systems are overloaded financially, just like ours, right? But now they're saying, what can we cut? And so while I was there in France, the national, their health institute voted that within a year and a half, they would be phasing out homeopathy in the fact that the national healthcare system would be paying for it. It's still available for physicians and patients and doctors, anyone to use. It just may not be covered by their national system anymore. However, as soon as I got home, I noticed that there were marches in the street of pro-homeopathy groups in France mounting a defense for the use and saying that they still think that it should be reimbursed and, you know, and not be condemned. But, you know, France has had a 200-year love affair with homeopathy. And, you know, they've got 25% of their general practitioners, their regular doctors, prescribe homeopathy. These aren't homeopaths. There are 4,000 homeopathic doctors there. But out of their 20,000 doctors, 25% regularly prescribe it. And 100% of the pharmacists provide and recommend homeopathic medicines on a daily basis. And the French population loves it. We've got the same thing in America, high approval ratings from consumers. They say they would buy it again. They thought that it worked, and they would recommend it to others. And that was by, you know, polls that have been done. So in-stream users like homeopathy, and physicians who work with it and understand it like homeopathy. It's the ones who don't understand it.
Yes.
Are afraid, yes, and want to get rid of it. And yes, then they want to cut as much as they can from healthcare.
Well, you know, the royal family have been using homeopathy since Victoria's time. And I believe the Queen has a homeopathic physician as well as, you know, a regular physician.
Right.
And they use it all the time. And they're not afraid to say so. I find it very short-sighted. I mean, we have the same thing happening in England where they've shut down the homeopathic clinics in the hospitals. And
right,
there is a big move to deny the efficacy of homeopathy. But if they want to save money, it makes a lot more sense for them to encourage people to educate themselves about homeopathy. They can buy it very cheaply. You know, we can use it ourselves on all of these minor ailments, save on trips to the GPs, and, you know, not clog up the waiting rooms. And certainly the NHS would be saving money. Why do they have to just make these sweeping changes without educating people?
Yeah, but you understand that in America especially, that the pharmaceutical companies are attached to the insurance companies that are attached to the government, that, you know, it's one big, huge system. So they don't want to necessarily disrupt the cycle. It's not about, you know, you'd think common sense would say, let's save money. Let's use something that's more prevention. But it's hard to break the cycle. And, you know, homeopathy is kind of going through the same thing that the supplement industry did a while back. So what happened was they tried to say in America, listen, we're going to take away, you know, all the vitamins and minerals because there's not enough research on that. And let's take it away and not let you utilize it. And if you want to, it's got to go through and be regulated like a drug. Well, the American public, they pushed back hard. I mean, letters to congressmen, this and that, again, kind of like what's going on in Europe. And there was such a pushback that the politicians went, oh, okay, we're not going to be able to do that. So they created DSHA, which means it's the regulations of how we would look at supplements. Now they're regulated as food. But homeopathy in America is regulated not as a food like supplements are. They're regulated as drugs. So these companies have to, the homeopathic companies have to register and go through everything that a drug would in America for homeopathy. So it's much more expensive for them to do that. So there's a whole wheel here of economically,
yes,
you know, why,
yeah,
these are, you know, having a problem.
Okay.
But I think we'll push back.
Push back, absolutely. Public needs to push back. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest today is global health educator, physician, Dr. Denise Warden, who's renowned for identifying and helping to introduce unique healing modalities and therapies to the USA. We'll be back with some exciting news about some innovations that are happening with cancer after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Denise Walden, when we were doing Truth in Medicine show, we spoke a lot about cancer. It seems that in the 8 months since the last show, there has been an explosion of, you know, research data emerging, all kinds of new things happening. So tell us, give us the skinny.
Well, yes. Well, along the line, you know that I've been a very big proponent, still am, of the metabolic therapies for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Diet, hyperbaric oxygen, molecules such as DON that block some of the pathways that we know that feed cancer. So those researchers that are really deep into mouse studies and hopefully soon into more human studies, and the in vitro and in the dish studies as well. Those I love to keep very close tabs on, and I do usually on at least a weekly basis. And so I was just in Boston for two reasons. I went there to spend some time with Dr. Tom Seyfried, who's considered kind of really the leader, I would say, or the power horse of these metabolic therapies at Boston College. And I wanted to go to his lab, spend time with him and with his researchers there and see what was happening. They're continuing to do the studies, proving what they've already published papers on and we already have seen clinically with human patients, and they've documented in mice that these metabolic therapies are working and they deserve more attention and more research monies to keep going forward. So very impressive, and everyone that's trying to keep track of that, it's Tom Seyfried, Dominic D'Agostino, those are ones they need to be watching. Now, outside of that is Dr. Bob Elliott, who's down in Louisiana. He's doing his own studies with the mitochondria, that's the little powerhouse inside of the cells, and seeing how do we make our mitochondria stronger and weaken the cancer. So that's all of this is about that, because the thought is that only a very small percentage of cancers are genetic, and even those, what turned on that gene? The thought in the metabolic community is that it's a mitochondrial problem, that there's damage inside the cell to the mitochondria, and that's where the studies need to be. So that's going forward, and it's fantastic. The second area was microbiome, Sandy, and that was a conference that I attended, and they had the leading researchers around the world and from major organizations and biotech companies that are saying, the bugs, let's use bugs as drugs. So bugs is in most of our human body, right? That's not really our DNA. It's all bugs. So they're looking at, you know, what probiotic type strains can they be used in immunology for cancer care? And that was the big conference that I went to in Boston. It was quite fascinating.
Wow, it's amazing, you know, that how people put together certain things. I mean, the paper that you sent me on different ways of doing metabolic therapy and the idea of combining chemo with ketogenics and hyperthermia and hyperbaric oxygen therapies. Who comes up with these ideas?
Well, that's where chemists, biochemists and physicists, they look at and say, what are we trying to do in the cell and in the body? And then they look at what's the standard of care, what are already doing, what are the problems, and they go down those pathways. So we know that oxidative and antioxidative therapies need to be timed. They need to be in a certain sequence, in a certain dose. And what we're seeing is when we add in these other metabolic therapies, it does something that's called chemosensitizing those cells. That means, and radiosensitizing, that means making those cancer cells more susceptible to the chemo and the radiation. It makes those things work better so you can use less. So that's the first step. All of this is about how do we help withstand the side effects and use less of the toxic therapies. And in time, we believe that they will stand alone, that maybe we can use hyperbaric oxygen and ketogenic diet and not have to do radiation. You know, we're not there to make that statement yet, but it's close. And physicians like Dr. Siefried already believe it. He says he's dead set against radiation and says we should be doing this now. But there are others that say we don't have enough data yet to let that go. So it's about working with standard of care, but it's about continuing the therapies and getting the grant monies to be able to show that maybe we're going to be able to do non-toxic therapies someday to help with cancer and neurodegenerative diseases. That's all the brain pathologies. And they're all mitochondrial problems.
So tell us briefly, how does hypothermia help? What does it do in the body?
Activates the body's own immune system. What happens when you get a cold or a flu? Your body creates a fever. Why is it doing that? It knows that if you heat a lot of those pathogens or a lot of those problems, they die. But what do people do? They say, I want to feel better. I don't want a headache and I don't want fever. So you put an aspirin in, bring that your fever down, and now you last 5 to 7 weeks being 5 to 7 days being sick as opposed to 1 or 2 with a high fever. That's activating the body's own immune system with hypothermia, but that is illegal. Whole body hypothermia is legal in the United States. It's not in Mexico and in Europe and other countries. They are utilizing it there.
What about hyperbaric oxygen? How does that help the body?
So that, again, is an oxidative therapy. So it's creating, you've got to work with oxygen. Either you want it high or you want to starve it. And it's about knowing what the cells need at what time. So hyperbaric oxygen, ozone therapy, all of these things are along the line of working with antioxidants and oxidative therapies to decide what's the timing and what's the dose and the sequence that we need to do to strengthen our own cells and weaken the cancer cells.
Now, ketogenics, obviously, as you know, there's been so much fuss about ketogenics. Everybody was interested in it. And then of late, there seems to have been a bit of a kickback against it, with a lot of naysayers coming to the fore. Tell us a little bit about how ketogenics actually can help the body.
Right. Well, in the case of
cancer.
Yeah, in the case of cancer, you want to not feed the cancer cells. So they love glucose, they love sugar, and that's where the ketogenic diet comes in. It is, you're taking out the carbs and you're not putting in sugars. Now, everything eventually turns to sugar, but it's how fast can the body process it, get it out before it would start being food for cancer. There's other pathways, but that's the main one, and that's how ketogenic works. That's why people were losing weight on it. The problem and the kickback is people aren't doing it correctly. They're doing like cutting out their carbs, but they're not putting in enough fat, and they're doing too much protein, so they're really not getting into ketosis. When you measure it, and there are devices to do that, when you measure it and you know you're in ketosis, I've watched it in my patients, and there's enough studies now to show that it is shrinking certain types of tumors, especially ones that love sugar, like brain tumors. So that it's, the science is robust enough to say we really need to be looking at this, and it works in the same kind of way with neurodegenerative diseases, with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. These sugar feeds bad cells and creates inflammation in all of our cells. So that's the big 30,000 square foot view of how that works.
Now, I want to talk to you about probiotics, because, you know, that's another thing that really has enjoyed an awful lot of attention of late. However, there are so many different strains of probiotics. You know, if you go to the health store, you've got so much choice. How are we going to know which ones specifically we need?
I think eventually we will. And that microbiome conference that I went to on oncology, that's what they're studying. They're looking at a single strain, or they're looking at multiple strains. And, of course, they're trying to see how can they patent it and package it up and make a product, you know, because they're going to spend a lot of money on this. We don't know enough yet. And so that's why I say rotate your probiotics and rotate your strains. The microbiome is millions and billions of bugs that we're made out of. And we don't know quite yet certain ones we know that are beneficial for certain things. But we've got a long way to go to really understand it. And there's a thought that especially in like autoimmune diseases or cancer, there could be some probiotic strains that may be working against us in those. So it's not take as much as you can in high doses. And this, it's about, in my opinion, right now, you rotate your products, you rotate your strains, do a normal level, and eat the foods, the kimchi and all the fermented foods. That's been used for centuries. So I just say rotate it, use multiple until we know more, because we don't know enough at this point. Thus, all of these conferences with top researchers that are trying to figure that out.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we do not get to hear much against it. Nobody's saying there are microbes there that you should not be taking. Everybody, you know, the media, they're all talking about, you know, the more the merrier.
Right, right. And we by some preliminary studies, are showing that may not be true. And I don't want people to stop taking their probiotics. They definitely should be on it. We know they're helpful in a lot of ways. But to do massive amounts, and thinking, especially like we said, with cancer and with you know, autoimmune type diseases or immune system issues, I think we need to be a little careful. We just don't know enough at this point.
There's been quite a bit of press about fecal transplant, right, where people who have a really compromised microbiome are
right,
benefiting. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, in Germany during the World War II, the way a lot of the people were told to that they were, it was said that they were being healthy was trying to trade or get a hold of healthy baby poop. And all that does, it's like eating bugs from the ground. It's in the poop. If it's somebody's healthy, they probably have a good microbiome. And though they've got more of the good bugs and less of the bad bugs. So the fecal transplant is all about that. Put in more good bugs and hope that they implant in this body that is struggling, and they know that they're depleted in the good bugs. It's all about the bugs, and I think I'm a big proponent and a big studier of the microbiome, and I think that's a wave of the future for a lot of pharmaceuticals, not just nutraceuticals. I've got some ideas of products that we're in the middle of developing with strains that we know are helpful in different ways. But, I think it is the wave of the future, Sandy, and we're going to see a lot more. You're going to hear a lot more about the microbiome. And my next trip in a week is to San Diego with another conference on the microbiome and skin and dermatology. And I think we'll talk about that probably at the next section of the show. But that's interesting, too. It's not just for oncology. It's for joint disease. It is for longevity. It's for all of these things, skin health and anti-aging. So it's a big movement, and you're going to hear a lot.
Okay. Until all of this information, you know, is out there in a way that most people can digest, I can imagine
right,
that we have listeners right now saying, okay, what do I need to take? What do I need to take?
Rotate them. Yeah.
Just rotate them.
Just
get
them
different strains and rotate them.
That's right. That's right. And because remember, fecal transplants, all of this, it's about putting in good bugs. What amount and which ones are specific to you, we have no idea right now. So that way, if you're putting in something that may not be great for you, at least you're not doing it on a consistent basis all the time. Right?
Mm.
So that's my opinion at this point is, just rotate those bugs. Now, Acidophilus and some others that we know, those are very safe and have been used for a long period of time, but they only populate certain areas of the gut. So you want a multi-strain, a probiotic that has many strains and has about a billion, you know, in there. But that's why you want to rotate them.
Okay. And what about shelf-stable that doesn't require refrigeration versus refrigeration?
Right. Well, the problem is when it gets made, if it gets made warm, it needs to be shipped warm and stay warm, shelf-stable all the way through. So the health food store doesn't get something that was made to be on the shelf and they put it in the refrigerator, and that's when you kill bugs and vice versa. If they were made cold, shipped cold, they need to stay cold. It's the change in temperature that where you lose the amount of bugs. It's not about what's better or not. Some strains need to be refrigerated, and so sometimes you're going to take ones that are shelf-stable, and sometimes you'll take the ones that need to be refrigerated. Your question, though, to where you're buying them is how are they manufactured, how are they transported, how are they stored, and how should you do when you take them home? That's the most important.
Exactly. And if you are traveling a lot,
You want shelf-stable. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Difficult one. I don't know. Are there any brands that you would recommend more than others?
You know, all I can say is that, you know, the brands that I carry on my store, Sandy, I can vouch for those because I get a certificate of analysis for every batch of every product that I carry. I know what I've got in my hands. I know they've been tested for safety, that they don't have the bad things in there, the microbes that grow, fungal, they don't have heavy metals, all those things. And I know which ones work clinically on my patients. But people don't have to be a patient to go to my website. Those I can vouch for. So it's hard for me to talk about other name brands because I'm not watching them like a hawk like I do the ones, all the brands that I recommend that I'm in control of, somewhat in control of.
Thank you. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with my former co-host of the Truth in Medicine show, Arizona-based physician and global health lecturer and educator, Dr. Denise Warden. We're talking about some of the latest advances in treating cancer, looking after the microbiome, and also about homeopathy. We'll be back with more from Dr. Warden after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Denise Warden, I want to back up a bit because you dropped a little bomb before the break that kind of slid past me. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, I want to know more about that. You talked about going to San Diego in a conference and you talked about probiotics and skin care. What on earth do probiotics have to do with skin care?
So remember, let's go back to the basics here, is that we humans are mostly bugs. Very little of us is DNA. So it's all about the bugs. And the bugs are everywhere. They're not just in our GI tract while we want to take probiotics. They're in every organ system. They regulate many things, immune system in the heart, in the joints. They're involved everywhere, and they're really involved in the skin. So, you know, there are cleaning products out there that I use in my kitchen. And in my house that are made from probiotics, because if you're putting good bugs in the parking spaces, the bad bugs don't have enough room to grow. Same thing on the skin. And it's not just about dermatology of working on skin conditions and helping the body heal, helping the skin heal. It's about making it more healthy, making the bugs work better together. So now we're making the skin look better. So there are cosmetic researchers. L'Oreal is going to be one of the speakers there, you know, dermatological, academic. This particular conference that I'm going to is all about skin and dermatology, and I'm very interested in it because, as you know, I created a skincare line myself because I wanted something that was organic, that was natural, but actually worked. You know, we've all tried a lot of it over the years, and I just couldn't find anything that seemed to be really working that was as clean as I wanted it to be. I'm proud of my skincare line, very proud, but I can't wait to introduce the bug.
Do you know, my imagination is working overtime here. I'm just delighting at the thought. Forget the retinol, forget the vitamin C, forget all of the other stuff. Just put some bugs on your face and watch them eat your wrinkles.
Right. And I think that we someday will get there. There are studies that have been done, and we know which bugs work best with the skin. And so I'm going to learn more from these top researchers. And remember, they're not just from America. Many of them are from all over the world, and they share. The problem is, Sandy, as you know, researchers do all this stuff, and a lot of times it's stuck in the lab. It could be 10 to 15 years before it comes to the market in either a drug or a product for people to use. That's where I come in. I'm out there looking and saying, we don't need to wait. We can do this now. This looks safe. It looks effective. We don't need to wait. In some of the cancer therapies as well, why wouldn't we be doing some of these therapies that cause no harm in the meantime, while we're learning more about it? Same thing with the skincare. So I can't wait to take, you know, we want it to smell good and look good and feel good as well. Some of the natural herbals that we know and ingredients and plankton from the sea and the clays that have been used since Cleopatra time that I'm utilizing in this line, Sandy, we love it. We know they work. But can it be better? And that's why I'm excited to go say, is there something right now that some, you know, researcher in Turkey is showing in actual studies that seems to be working? Why wouldn't we try that now? So that's why I like to stay forefront with all of them in formulations as well, just to say, if I know it's safe and it's allowed, then I don't want to have to wait 15 years for it to become a product where people can enjoy it.
Well, tell us then your own skincare line. What is special about your skincare line?
Well, you know, I was actually asked to make it by a medical distributor that said, we've got all these, you know, organic clean line things, but we're not getting resales on it. They're just not rebuying it. People are interested. They want to do it, but we don't see a whole lot of rebuy, and so that means maybe it's not working. And I know from my own personal use of these things, I just didn't do everything I wanted them to do. So I started with the cleanest ingredients, and I worked with a company, and still am, a manufacturer that had some wonderful, wonderful products already. I mean, they're based in coconut oil and hemp oil, and you know, they've got essential oils in them, things that we know that are lovely that have been working already. But I needed them to do more. So when I found this strategic partner and we started working together and sampling and looking, we just kept developing the line, and we're still developing the line. So it's karma-free, we call it. So it's not tested on animals. It's not we don't have animal byproducts in it. By the way, a lot of skincare has bug stuff grown up, crushed up in that. Then we're going to say not the kind of bugs we're talking about, right? But there's things in there that shouldn't be in there. I have a whole, if people are interested, they could call the office. We'll send them out. I have a whole PowerPoint presentation on this, and a piece of it is what ingredients should not be in your product, and how to read a label. If it ends in ENG, if it begins with it, how do you read that label? Because if you're going to put something on your skin or in your body on a continual basis, it's your responsibility to make sure it's clean and it's not going to harm you in the meantime of you thinking it smells good and looks good, right? Or you're putting something in thinking it's healthy. So the responsibility ultimately relies with you. But you got to work with doctors or, you know, people that you know that you trust that are doing as much testing as needs to be done.
You are constantly on the lookout. I mean, you're constantly testing things. I've seen you in action, and I don't know how you do it. But what are the things, the discoveries, the ingredients, the supplements that you are excited enough about to want to be able to share information about and include in your own lines?
Right. Well, there's a few things I'm not going to talk about yet until I come out with it, Sandy, but let me tell you a big picture. They're big picture. Everybody already knows that's been following me. I like pectins. I like, the citrus pectin, but there are other pectins. So I'm doing a lot of study about that, and I'm finding out more and more, and I'm very excited to come out with product line that's utilizing pectins. That I'm excited about. But there are also some unique ingredients, again, from researchers in other countries. They just don't have the money, financing, or the ability to market, and they don't know how to make a product to take it to market, and that are just sitting there. And I cannot wait to utilize that. My idea is that people are not wanting to take, 15 different products. I know that from my patients. Nobody wants to take a bunch of capsules or pills or a bunch of stuff. So I'm trying to get as much as I can into one main powder that you can do on a daily basis that is covering as many bases as we can. But that's hard because we want to keep the cost down, right? And you want to, but by the time you take all these other supplements, it's going to be a lot less. We keep the cost down, get the most efficacious. It's some unique ingredients that I think are really, really going to benefit people. I'll have specific, liver one, if we've got pathologies or problems going on, I'll have specific other products in the line. Right now, I've got a great line right now on my website, Dr. Warden's Prescription for Health. I have every category covered right now with quality products that I believe in. I mean, again, I've done the research and I know they work. Not only they scientifically and on the clean side, but I'm watching them work in my patients. So I feel good with what I have, but I'm in development of some really interesting. And Sandy, you'll get to be one of the first to hear about it, if not the first, when I'm ready to bring these new things out. I'm
good.
Excited because I don't want to take a bunch of stuff either.
No.
I don't like it.
And I'm going to hold you to that one. I mean, ever since I've known you, which is about 10 years, I've been saying to you, you need to be, producing these things. You need to have a newsletter. You need other ways to keep people up to date in the same way you've been keeping me and our listeners up to date. And I'm absolutely thrilled that you've finally taken my advice and you've got your new website and you've got your Truth in Medicine newsletter. There are many people out there now like Dr. Axe, Dr. McCullough, I've been following for, I don't know, about 15, 20 years even. And it's wonderful to have those resources, but to see a female, stepping up and taking her rightful place amongst them, that's just, that feeds me on every level.
And I appreciate that, Sandy. The new PR agent that we haven't launched the real social media big campaign. Now, I am on social media. People can follow me on Facebook and Twitter and all that. I get a lot of this information or research out there on that. But a big campaign is going to happen within a few months. And so they'll be hearing a lot more from me. And I do believe that we need a female face of medicine. The hard part, as you know, if you get a researcher and a physician, many times they're not just able to impart the knowledge, to speak it at a level that everybody can understand, and not have media experience. With my television background and now with all this knowledge that I've been gathering for these 20 years, I'm ready. I've got the knowledge, I've got the confidence, and I'm ready to say we know this and we don't know that, and to hold myself and others to that, to the truth in medicine. That's why you and I started the co-hosting this, last year, is that where is the truth? And more is not better, and gimmicks are not the way to go. And sometimes we just don't know. And it's okay to say that. But when we do know, it's okay to be passionate about that as well and not be afraid to get the backlash, like with homeopathy, with these things, and saying, listen, I'll get backlash for supporting this, but I believe in it. I know what I've seen in my patients for 20 years. That's what I know clinically. So I know the things that I, and ingredients and supplements and this and that. I know what I have watched on lab work and imaging that I feel that has helped my patients. So I'm ready, Sandy. I'm just more than ready. And I, yes, you've been after me, but it takes a team. It takes a village.
Yes, it does.
Social media and a website, you know that. It's a huge undertaking. And I just wanted to dig my little self in, see my patients, see what was working, and do the research and understand it to the point where I was ready to come out and say, here I am, I'm ready to tell the truth, my truth, as far as I know it.
Let me just digress a little, and I'm going to delve a little bit personally here. When you became a physician, because, you know, you have this television background, you have a very interesting background, and then you gave that up and you studied to become a physician because you're passionate about what you do and you want to help people. Did you ever dream that one day that television background and your, you know, work as a physician would actually coalesce and lead to what is happening now?
Actually, the first day of medical school, they had us stand up and say what we thought we would do with our medical degree. And everybody said, I want to open a clinic and I want to see patients. And I stood up and said, I want to be an educator. I want to use my background in media, my ability to impart good information. So from day one of medical school, I announced that I would do this. So I dreamed it, and I just didn't know when. And you know about my book, that as soon as I get my social media numbers up, we're ready to finish the book about cancer and what happens when you find out you have a cancer diagnosis. And I'm very excited, and I feel that's a big piece of the legacy. It's not about products. It's not about things. These are great. They help people. And I'm imparting, hopefully, knowledge that can help people with their lives from the top researchers in the country and leading-edge therapies. But I feel like my book will be something that when I am gone will still be something that can carry forward and still really help people. So, Sandy, I'm there. I'm at that tipping point. I'm at that edge, and I'm ready. I'm already starting to tip into it with my social media. People can look and see what I've got out there and give me suggestions. I'd love it. But I have a whole team that will jump in within months and hopefully be able to continue to help more people.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, your answer is very interesting to me because many people that I speak to, occasionally I will ask that question, excuse me, and many of them really don't join the dots together until much later. You know, they don't have that clear a view of where they're going, and they look back and they think it was just destiny pushing them in a particular direction. So it's refreshing to hear you say you knew what you wanted to do.
I did, you know, I did. And, you know, my mom was like a naturopath without a degree. We were eating probiotics and yogurt. We were eating yogurt before anybody else in the neighborhood was. They were like, what is this? You know, my mom was cooking and doing, she literally was a naturopath. And with that, because she read everything, that piece of where I get this. My dad's a scientist too, but read everything about health and wanted her family healthy. So that's been inbred in me. I've always been interested in science because all my relatives are. Physics, if I'm going to come back, I'm going to be a physicist next time because I like frequency and energy medicine. But, you know, I knew that all the things that I've done in my life would accumulate into something for the betterment of something far bigger than myself. And I thought if I went into medicine, I wanted to be a brain surgeon because surgery is the only thing that makes sense to me in medicine, traditional medicine. The other was always questionable in my mind. So when I found out there was a way to study both and to use more natural therapies to become a naturopathic medical doctor, that was it.
Well, thank you for doing that because we get to benefit. And I'm definitely going to hold your feet to the fire. I want to be the first to know when all of these things that you're alluding to become available. And I don't want you to get so busy that you don't have time to come back on this show.
That will never happen, Sandy. I love you. I love your audience. I mean, you've supported me from the very beginning, and I will always, always be available in any way that I you or your listeners.
Good. look forward to seeing you again. I've actually already got you in the schedule for December, so I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got to say then. The way things are moving, it's just so fast. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, who knows, there may be a cure for cancer.
Yeah. Well, it's a multiple diseases and this and that, but you know what, I do believe we're getting closer where we can live with it. It's just another chronic degenerative disease, not one that will kill us. I think we're going to get there in the not too far future.
I think so too. Dr. Denise Warden, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Sandy.
For more information about Dr. Warden's work, to sign up for her newsletter, which I heartily encourage you to do, visit drwarden.com, drwarden.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.